Naveed, thank you so much for being on the Dastani podcast. I really appreciate you taking out the time and trekking it up to Islamabad, first and foremost, because when we got in touch, we were like, we're going to do this on Zoom. So now we're doing this in person. And we're doing it on my turf, so it's even nicer for me to kind of do it over here. But like, let's start with a little bit of contextualization about who Naveed is. And then from that, like a quick, you know, two-minuter, so that we can kind of go on and talk a little bit about more stuff that's interesting and that stuff that's going on around Pakistan and around travel and around tourism and around the stuff that you're doing with the new place that you just opened and everything else. So let's start from there.
All right. Well, Naveed just turned 43 a couple of days ago.
Wow.
And
happy belated.
Thank you. Yeah. I just turned 43. I have been working all kinds of jobs since I was 16, actually. So I've lost count of how many jobs I've held, starting from that kid you see at the ice cream shop, scooping, you know, ice cream into thousands of cones every day, to when I moved to the U.S. and started doing odd jobs, waiting tables, and you know, eventually graduated to managing the floor, eventually spilled coffee on an old couple who turned out to be the owners of Marriott, a franchise of Marriott in Seattle.
Wow.
Who then offered me a job.
Dude, you know what? Something like that's happened to me as well.
No way.
I was at a party in Dubai one time, and I was actually saying, like, your website is shit, and like I was complaining about a company. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it turned out to be the CEO of that company. And I was like, oh my God, I need to run away from like here right now. And instead, what he did was he gave me his card and he's like, come meet me tomorrow.
Nice.
It's really weird how sometimes that
exactly.
That works.
Well, I spilled coffee on the wife. They were both about like late 50s, early 60s. My manager, this is Denny's in Seattle. Yeah. My manager had just put me on a shift because he was short. I wasn't ready yet to carry hot liquids or any liquids for that matter. And I was so nervous. As soon as I got to the table, I bent over without like balancing the tray. And this entire mug of hot coffee went straight on the woman's lap.
Rookie mistake, man.
And this guy like fired me. And the lady yelled at him and said, it's your fault. He's obviously not trained yet. And that's okay. Would you like to work for us? Here's our card. You see that building coming up right in front of you? That's our hotel. Come work for us. But anyway, fast forward, you know, I studied crisis management and got into Red Cross, emergency response trainings. Eventually, one thing led to another. I got a job offer with the BBC. Ended up taking that offer, which brought me to Islamabad many years ago, back in 2011.
Okay.
It was the Army Public School attack in Peshawar. That evening, I turned in my resignation because by then I had seen a lot of crises and just bad stuff. And I served my 2-month notice. I rented a house in Hunza.
Yeah.
And I moved up, and by the end of that time in Hunza, where I was just exploring, it was just me, my dog. We were just exploring, doing as many treks as possible, meeting all kinds of new people. One day, I get an email from a guy, actually a Facebook message, asking if I would be willing to take his friend on a tour to all the places I've been to, because this guy loves all of the photos he's seeing of mine.
Where was this? Oh, on Facebook.
On Facebook.
Got it.
I didn't know who this guy was. I was also not on Facebook that much at that time.
Yeah.
I had just started Facebook when I quit BBC. And this guy turned out to be Humans of New York, Brandon Stanton.
No way.
I had already agreed to doing it before I knew who it was. I took him up, didn't realize what a big deal he was. And when we came back down from Hunza, we were staying at my old place in Islamabad. And he's like, Naveed, you know, since you're now setting up a tour company, I'd like to do a little thank you note on my page for you. But before I do that, I want you to be ready for it because you'll get hit by like a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so that day I came up with like my Facebook page, my Instagram, just so I was ready.
This is what year is this?
This is 2015.
15, so six years ago. Okay, so yeah. Instagram is becoming a thing now. Facebook is quite big.
I mean, it was already a thing. I was just not on it, okay. Right?
It's coming a thing for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, for me. And yeah, so that's how Hunza on Foot started. It was supposed to be a blog, by the way.
Okay.
Just like a blog telling people where to go, where to stay. It's like, you know, a travel guide. But when that happened with Humans in New York, I had to quickly set up kind as of, a tour company. Yeah. And then I started doing very small, manageable size tours. And now, fast forward 6 more years, we've branched out from Hunza to now a lot of trips happening in Baltistan.
Okay.
We've started paragliding and
nice.
Some...
In
the boonies, yeah. We're talking now about doing some wildlife stuff in Chitral.
Okay.
So now, yeah, and now I'm also into bed and breakfast. I now just opened up my second place, which happens to be in Shigar, and with plans that we're going to start the third location in Chitral next year.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay, so a couple of things from what you just said that like come out to me that I'd love to kind of go a little bit deeper on. One, social media and how it's affected you and how it's affecting tourism generally, I think, in Pakistan is a massive kind of macro thesis that's like very interesting to kind of look at. Like when we see, like, I mean, I first traveled, I think four years ago, I went to Hunza. That was the first time that I ever went. I went, I was in Islamabad for some time. I just randomly booked a random bus and with like 8 strangers.
Yeah.
I had never traveled alone in Pakistan. And this was like completely off the track for me. And I booked and I went to F6 Market and got into this bus when I'd broken my back as well and got into a bus. And I was off to Hunza for, I think, 7-8 days. That was my first kind of recollection.
Mm.
Horrible drive up, beautiful scenery. The hotels were so and so, but like looking at the PTDCs and the availability of rooms back 4 years ago to what it is today and how tourism's kind of come up. One, I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on the last 3-4 years with a lot of people coming in. And then if you could kind of talk about it alongside the social media thing. But, I mean, I didn't know that the Humans of New York guy, Brand San, was like one of the first people that came with you.
Because he was the first.
I mean, that's huge. That's like right away you're being just like thrown off the cliff.
Thrown in the deep end, yeah.
You're thrown off the cliff because usually like, you know, you kind of, you set up and then every once in a while you get a couple of people and you build a brand. This is someone who has so much authenticity and so many people looking up to him. Like anything he says, a 1% conversion rate on that is going to be huge.
Yeah.
So, how do you see that affecting like the smaller tour groups that are coming here? How do you see that affecting the tourism kind of industry in Pakistan? And what do you think about social media and how it's like, how you, because also you, the way you look at it and the way that you work, I mean, you're doing this live thing right now. That's something that you've been doing for some time now. So how do you look at that? And then the other question around tourism.
Well, it started off great. It started off as a tool to just put out great information, great, just like, you know, kind of like an ambassadorship to the rest of the country and the world of what they're missing out on in Pakistan. It started off great. You know, I was able to post photos. Back then, being an influencer, vlogger, YouTuber, Instagrammer was not a thing.
Yeah.
Back then, Instagram was, to me at least, an app where I could just, you know, share my favorite moments with people that thought my account was worthy of their follows, right? And it started very slow, very small. And eventually, it became a thing that I just despised. Like, I have now stopped posting photos. I think I just posted my first in months 2 days ago.
Okay.
After months of not posting anything, I do a lot of stories because they expire after 24 hours. So that to me is still like, okay, you know, I'll post something. People that see it, they see it. The ones that don't see it, oh well. What I see happening now with social media is there's a lot of bad information being put out there, or there's a lot of information without a lot of foresight or thought into it. So, you know, let's say I go to a place, I take a photo, I post a photo, that's fine. But what I put in there as a caption could make it or break it, right? Yeah. I'll give you an example. A lot of international travelers, YouTubers, Instagrammers have started coming to Pakistan as of a few years ago. I know a couple that have come here and posted things. For example, this guy who claimed to have walked all of this region on foot. I know he didn't, because I was kind of with him for at least 2 days where he drove. But, you know, he took one sign on the side of the road that said, down with Israel, down with USA. Not, hey, I'm down with this USA, but down, right? And he took that photo and he posted it on his social media and the TV show, which created such a bad image for Pakistan. And he made it sound like there were people chasing him. And he had to run for his life. That's just one example.
Okay.
Then there's a lot of tour groups now that are just coming up on social media. There are social media tour groups. Most of them are not registered, licensed tour operators. And they're not even trained. So alpining, they don't know what they're doing.
So no safety precautions.
Rescue, they don't know. First aid, they don't know. So basically, you tomorrow could open up an Instagram account or a Facebook account. Mm-hmm. With a catchy name, Adventure Pakistan, Travel Pakistan, whatever, and put out a tour post saying we're taking you from Karachi, Lahore, all the way to the China border for 20,000 rupees. Okay. You are bound to sell out, right? You'll take 20 people. No one cares if there's an accident. No one cares if you don't know how to treat that accident. If a guy like breaks his leg by a fall, you don't know what to do because you're just some random dude. College dropout who now has a tour company that's not registered. So yes, there's a lot of great potential for social media, but now it's given birth to a lot of problems in the north. Also, like, now I feel bad if I post a photo and if I market it too much, all kinds of people will go there.
Yeah,
and they'll leave trash, they won't respect the place, they'll smoke up, they'll drink, they'll party. I will be blamed. I have been blamed for a lot of this in the past, where I was told when I came back that, you know, because of you, X amount of people started coming here and they don't respect us. They don't respect our culture. They play music really loud. We see them walking around in like short shorts and tank tops. And so, you know, like, I'm now very like scared of posting stuff because of the backlash, if that makes sense. But still, like, it's like any tool, man. Like, I can beat you to death with a wrench, or I can fix something.
100%.
You know?
Yeah. So now, like, if we look at infrastructure-wise, what Pakistan? Okay, so I'll give you an example, right? Like, recently, I've been telling a lot of friends to go up and take a look and go to Rumi, for instance.
Right.
And what ends up happening is, like, there's two different kinds of tourists in Pakistan. I wonder if, like, this happens with your friends as well. Where one is the Pakistani who has always lived in Karachi or lived in Lahore or lived in Islamabad but has never gone outside in Pakistan but has traveled the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the Pakistani that, you know, has been to the PTDCs and thought, like, okay, I don't care about where I'm staying. I'm going to camp if I have to, but I want to see these really beautiful places.
Yeah.
Now, the first tier of tourist, because of the lockdowns, the year and a half that everyone's been kind of, you know, tied down in Pakistan and you can't go anywhere, all of a sudden is now going in Pakistan.
Yeah.
So you're getting like this two-pronged kind of different kind of people, like one who would be fine with camping and like is actually into adventure tourism, but the others who would not necessarily be into adventure tourism, they would be looking for luxury and they're anticipating that everything is this arena.
Right.
And how do you kind of mitigate and like manage those kinds of expectations with people? Because like that's something that I've found so fascinating. Because you know there's always an evolution, and in Pakistan there is still a lack of infrastructure. And we were talking about this before we kind of went live with the podcast, where you know there is so much development that's in process,
mm-hmm.
but there's no kind of regulation around how do you mitigate and create infrastructure that allows you to create this development in a sustainable long-term manner.
Yeah.
Whereas that's one thing. And then the other is like people are just expecting that everything is going to be super clean and everything is going to be super, you know, accessible and everything is going to be like a 5-star hotel. Whereas these places are some of the most remotest places in Pakistan. Like in Islamabad, but like the light goes, man. Like how can you expect in the mountains the light to not go?
Yeah, no. So how I do it is, but what I do is I educate people that want to go up north with me. And if the process starts early, like there are certain groups that I form very last minute.
Okay.
That start with you writing to me. You say, hey, I want to go next month or 2 weeks from now. I don't have enough time to educate people that might join that group after you because I have no time. But let's say I have a group for December. I have plenty of time to do a lot of back and forth, a lot of just like educating them on what to expect, not just on the trails or where we're going to sleep that night, but what that place is like, what to expect in terms of
amenities,
food and beverage, temperatures, what to pack for. That doesn't happen with most tour companies. I know, like, I can count them on one hand, the companies that actually educate their customers before they take their money, because everybody else is so like busy, so like trying to get you to sign up as quickly as possible. They don't want to scare you. They don't want to tell you, oh, by the way, where we're going, there's no Serena. So we're going to be sleeping in tents or in the shepherd hut, which, you know, has a bad roof. And if it rains, we're going to be soaked. So there's a lot of fear that if I tell you too much, you won't sign up. My thing is, I'd rather scare you from signing up now than have you pissed off at me, not knowing,
and having to deal with
up there in the middle of nowhere, because that won't only like negatively affect your experience, but your experience will be so contagious that it will like infect other people around you, right? People that will be having fun will be like, well, he's right, you know, we are wet and we are miserable and we are cold, you know, and that's. These are a few of the things that I promise to sell you. Wet, cold, and misery. You know? Because if you don't want to be wet and cold and miserable, don't sign up with me. But yes, I will promise things. And if I cannot deliver, I will find the next best thing. And yeah, we're not ready for a crazy amount of tourism. We're not ready for international flights yet.
No. You know, I mean, even domestic tourism, domestic. The amount of tourism, the amount of domestic tourism, like the rate at which it's growing.
Yeah.
It's difficult to even manage that, in my opinion.
Exactly. Like right now, there's no information being passed out to customers coming to the north because everybody is scared they're going to lose business. I've had people like walk up to me at the Serena Hotel saying, hey, you seem to know your way around here, not knowing who I was or what I do. Just they saw me talking to locals or whatever. And they'd be like, hey, listen, we can't find a room at the Serena. Do you know of any other good, clean place like the Serena we could go to? Because we just showed up here not knowing there was only one hotel where we would like to stay.
Yeah.
And also, like, what is there to do? So there's no like information being given out to people that show up there. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. They Google stuff, you know. So again, like be a responsible buyer. Like you're going all the way to the north. At least do some research. At least book a room, 100%. Man. You know.
No, but also like, you know, sometimes when you go, and I'm very curious to kind of see how, like, you know, when the adventure tourism is going to start to get into more cultural food, architectural. There are so many different ways of looking at it, right? But like a lot of people think that they're going to get the latter, but then they don't know where they're going is adventure or where you're going
right.
to not have the infrastructure that you're going to kind of want to be going and kind of getting. And then the other thing that you spoke about where, like, you know, you need to be responsible and kind of understand, like, the other day I was reading an article where, like, someone got banned or, like, kicked out of a mall in Dubai.
Okay.
And, like, if that can happen in Dubai, I'm sure they can happen in Pakistan. Like, being a little bit responsible of, like, understanding the culture, understanding where you're going and being respectful to that, I think, is 100% something insanely important. Okay. I see here you've walked 3,100 kilometers across Pakistan. How did that kind of come about? Where did that come about?
That's a funny story. This is when I first moved to Hunza and I started like actually exploring on foot by means of like different treks I did. And that's when a client who was up on a trail with me told me about this guy who was walking the earth and okay. how I should follow and just like read up on his journey. I was like, hell yeah, you know, like that sounds like my sort of a guy. And so I started following this guy's journey. His name is Paul Selopek.
Okay.
He's Nat Geo's like top fellow, 2-time Pulitzer winning author. So I started reading up on his journey, but started in 2013 in Ethiopia. And so I started, like, the more I read, the more it inspired me. And then I had, like, I started walking a lot, like, instead of, like, renting a car to go, like, 4 villages across, I would just keep pushing myself to just walk, right? And then one day the idea just got planted in my brain that since I cannot walk the earth right now, I'm just...
A big thing to kind of conquer.
I'm just going to walk across the country. And that, like, you know, I sat with that idea for like 2 months, 3 months almost, until one day I just realized that I'm never going to do it until I post it on my Instagram and my Facebook. One morning I made myself a cup of coffee and I went on my Instagram. I'm like, I've decided I'm going to start walking on this date, October 1st, 2016, from Khunjarab, and I'm going to try and reach Karachi coast by New Year's Eve.
Okay.
And since it was on social media, I had to do it. So October 1st, I started walking. It took me 91 days. I reached Karachi literally New Year's Eve.
So you timed it well?
Yeah. I mean, I had to really like push myself. There were times at the end because I got delayed a lot in the middle when I reached Islamabad that I had to catch up. You know, make up for lost time. So I started doing, instead of average of 25, 30 kilometers a day,
okay,
I started doing an average of 50.
25, 30, I've done a day. 50 is
yeah.
Is
no, like I lost toenails, man. Like, and that was the hardest part because by then I had reached Sindh and it was hot. Even December, it was just,
really?
It was hot. It was like miserably hot. Even in December, like I had started Sindh around the 8th or the 9th of December.
Okay.
And I had only like 3 weeks to finish the rest. So I would then break it into 2 halves. Like I would do 25 in the morning, like starting at 4:30 in the morning. And then when the sun was right on top of me, I would stop, take a break, and I'd start again.
Whoa.
3-4 hours before sunset. And then a lot of people that had seen me walking in the north, who were from Karachi and Hyderabad, promised that they were going to join me.
Okay.
Once I reached their turf.
Nice.
And I literally had people joining me randomly from all over that walked me to the border, to the coast. Eventually, the guy who inspired me to walk...
Your live video is audio isn't working.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to put a little thing in there. Guys, if you cannot hear me, we're going to post the podcast on the Dastangoi.
Yes, and you'll see it there.
And if you guys are really interested in what we're talking about.
Oh, the battery's gone.
If you guys are really interested in what we're talking about, we'll post this on Dastangoi. You can check it out there. I'll just bring this closer for now. Yeah. All right, so...
So, okay.
Not selfie mode, though.
Yeah.
All right. So, and yes, my mom is trying to jump in here, like I told you.
You know, when you're going through that whole walking process, like, have you heard of this Camino, El Camino?
Yes, yes.
Was that part of your research?
No, well, it was.
Because it's walking itself is a very meditative process.
It was part of my research in the sense that I started preparing myself, not physically, but mentally.
Okay.
And I started reading up a lot on long journeys on foot. And one of the things I read up a lot on was the El Camino, you know, that whole Spain to Italy and Italy to Spain walk. What I found different was, and then I spoke to my big brother about this because he wanted to do that walk with his wife, and then the eventually, yeah.
Okay.
And what I realized, and then I met somebody, this Italian diplomat in Islamabad, who had done that walk twice.
No way.
Now we compared notes. And what we both realized was so different about that walk and this walk was, it was a very non-commercial walk. That is such a commercial walk. That
you
there
get a
are,
lot of people there, I would assume.
There's a lot of people on your trail, but also there's like hostels every stop, every night.
Ah, okay. Infrastructure.
Infrastructure-wise, yeah. It's meant for that walk, right? So it's like a pilgrimage journey that you take, and it is set up for people on foot to rest every night.
Yeah.
There were times when I had to sleep in drains, inside dried-up drains, because it was pouring down rain, and there was no place to stay. And I found out that the drain, the gutter, was cleaner than where I would have to sleep that night, you know? And so anyway, but that walk, after I finished that walk and I told myself I'm done walking, 3 months walking in Pakistan is not easy, bro.
Dude, I would want to hear some of the stories that came up, like the people that you would have met.
I mean, yeah, amazing, amazing people I met. I've met people on that trail that, like, city folk, don't even come close to. But after I finished that walk and I thought I was done walking, I got an email one day from Paul Selopek, the guy who inspired me to walk, who had read an article about my walk and told me that he was about to start applying for his Pakistani visa, that he was in Badakhshan at the time, and that he was waiting for his Pakistani visa, and he wanted to know if I'd want to walk with him.
Wow.
And of course, like, you know, your like idol, although new, but the guy who inspired you to take such a massive challenge has just asked you to walk with him. Of course I said yes. And so 2017, September 22nd, 2 days before my birthday, I trekked up to the Irshad Pass.
Okay.
Wakhan Corridor, and Paul Selopek and Matthew Paley I went and I received them on the top of the Irshad Pass.
No way.
Well, a little before the top, because we got hit by a really bad weather front. And so, yeah, I met Paul and Matthew on that top, and we started our walk down from there, and we walked all the way to the India border, 6 months. It was longer, twice as long and half as long, as in like distance wise. But because Paul was doing slow journalism, he was writing a book. There was a lot of stopping and doing a lot of stories with Paul. But so yeah, now I've walked twice across the country almost. I'm looking forward to one day being able to walk across, you know, covering Balochistan, KPK.
I mean, Matthew just did a walk across Balochistan recently.
Yeah.
So he did the whole Lahoot thing.
Yeah.
And he covered that. That was insane. Yeah. And then right now he was just here with his son.
Yeah.
And they were trekking around.
So I met his family a long time ago, even before my walk. I met Matthew. And then I found out that Matthew was going to be joining Paul on his walk from Badakhshan to the Pakistan side of Wakhan Corridor. And then he left. He was just there to cover the Wakhan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Man, but like things like that is like when you start thinking about like, did the walk have any meditative or spiritual kind of underpinnings for you? Or was this purely like you got inspired and you wanted to go ahead and do this?
Say again.
Did you have any meditative or spiritual kind of reasons also for wanting to do this? Or
no.
Whilst you were doing this?
No. I was not prepared. It was a very spiritual journey. It ended up being that way at the end. But it is not why I did it. It was just a physical challenge. I wanted to know if I could do it. I'm going to download this.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this thing stopped. But anyway, it was not meant as a spiritual journey. It was just like, you know, okay, this guy can do it. He's 63 years old. I am 38, 39 back then. I'm like, if he can do it, I'm almost half his age. I better be able to do it. And so I started it not knowing. And I was like more worried about, you know, preparing myself logistically. I was well prepared. I had some support from a friend who sponsored like a support vehicle, because in the beginning there were no hotels, no campsites, no places to stay or eat. And I was a little worried because I came from BBC background, where I was like always paranoid. I was always like thinking of the worst of people. And so I thought that, you know, I will need a support vehicle. And so a friend of mine, she agreed on like driving that vehicle. And another friend who owns like a whole school system, he wanted to sponsor my walk. I was like, don't sponsor the walk, just give me a backup vehicle, a 4x4. And so I had support, but then I realized very quickly I didn't need it, because the most dangerous places are those places that took care of me the most. Like, you know, people talk about Chilas and Kohistan and how dangerous it is. And then people tell me about like Interior Sindh, and that there was going to be like, you know, Dakus after me, the dacoits and robbers, and like people are going to kill me. People are going to be like, you know what, you're crazy, better have life insurance. At least like your family will make some money from your craziness. And you know what, man, like I was afraid. Like I said, I used to be in a job that only went after the worst news. You know, there's a saying in journalism, if it bleeds, it leads. And so coming from that straight to like walking across places that were marked red on my map at BBC, like, you know, Bureau, there was a big map and all these places were marked in red. They were high risk areas. And these people, I'll tell you just one quick story you wanted to know. As I reached this village called Khyber, back then they were just laying down optic fiber for Eskom, for CPEC starting. There was this like construction crew. There's a photo of this on my Instagram. There was this like crew of maybe 24 folks, all from Chilas, Kohistan area, right? Supposedly very dangerous place, very bad people, because of one incident. I had just reached there. I was kind of like sick and tired of being stopped for chai, for tea every like 2 kilometers. And so I told myself, I'm not going to stop again for like 3 days. I'm just going to excuse myself every time I get stopped. I don't know why, but this like group of construction workers, day laborers, they started waving at me and they thought I was like some guy from out of Pakistan. So they're like, hey, come have chai with us. I'm like, oh shit, screw it. I'll have this. This is going to be my last chai. I go there and this guy, he's just like very interested in my story. And as soon as he finds out, and one of the guys goes, where are you going? Did you have a breakdown? Do you need money? Do you need us to drop you somewhere? I'm like, no, I'm walking. And like, where are you walking to? And I said, Karachi. And right now I'm in Upper Hunza, right? So I still have like about 86 days to go. And this guy's like, what? And he's like, do you know where Karachi is? I'm like, yep, I'm from Karachi. He's like, and you're walking there. I'm like, yep. He's like, are you okay? And this one guy, after they found out why I was walking and what inspired me, this one guy, he was probably like 22 years old, big, muscled guy. He goes, boss, I'm quitting my job. I don't want this life anymore. And this guy's going to get killed on the way. He's going to get mugged, robbed, killed. Something bad will happen. He doesn't know what he's doing. I'm quitting my job. I'm walking with him. I'm going to make sure he reaches Karachi safe. Wow. And I'm not kidding. Like, he was not kidding. He quit his job. I had to like force him to stay where he was. He went into his servant quarter, like his quarters, packed up his bag, came out. That's when I realized he was serious. I was like, dude, you're not walking with me. This is a solo walk. I don't want you there. And then he's like, listen, when you get to Chilas, here's my brother's number. Call him. He's going to take care of you. if you need anything, food, place, shelter, whatever, he will take care of you. And I did. Like, I, as I got to Chilas, I called him. And this guy was waiting on the road for me.
No way.
And they stopped me for, like, 5 days. They didn't let me go. So they did kidnap me, but only to attend their sister's wedding. And they fed me. They tortured me with food. They kidnapped me, gave me the best hospitality. And then they walked with me for 2 days until I crossed, like, got out of Kohistan.
Wow.
So, you know, like, there's just like dozens of stories like that. The everyday Pakistani is so hospitable, kind, selfless, that I was intoxicated, bro. Like, I didn't want it to end.
That's insane. Okay, I want to ask you something. I mean, you've been speaking about walking and trekking. What was your first trekking experience? Like, what started it all? Because this walk was after you started trekking as well, right?
Yeah, much after. Yeah. My first trek in Pakistan was when I first quit BBC, and I it's another funny story. I was sitting. I had just rented a house from this guy who owns a bunch of hotels in Hunza, and his house was just kind of just sitting there empty. He lives in Saudi. And so I rented his house. I was really happy there, but there was no, like, the bathroom wasn't working at the time. So I was, like, trying to get the plumbing done. So every morning I'd wake up and I'd go all the way to, I'd hike up to main Karimabad Road just to use the bathroom. And then I'd go to Cafe de Hunza for my morning coffee and breakfast. And one day I'm, like, sitting at this friend's hotel, Hilltop Hotel in Hunza. And there's this, like, group of Koreans in the next table, and they're having breakfast and they're talking about their trek, and the owner of the hotel is like, oh, you should, like, become friends with them, they're really cool, go, you know, they're here for a week, they go on treks every day, you should go with them because you just sit there alone. I'm like, cool. So I joined this group of, like, three or four guys, you just sit there alone. I'm like, cool. So I joined this group of, like, three or four guys, two girls, two guys, and I quickly developed a major crush on one of the girls. And I'm not prepared for this trek, right? I have not trekked in years. I mean, with the BBC, like, I got fat and lazy. And so here I am, like, trying to impress this chick. And she goes, you know, we're going to Rakaposhi Base Camp tomorrow morning. You should come with us. I'm like, yes. What time? Like, we're leaving at 5. I'm like, I'll be here at 4:30. So I go with them. We start this trek. And I didn't realize, but they had done that trail twice before.
Oh, wow.
And they were there for the third time to beat their time record.
Oh, my God.
From the first two times.
Okay.
They did not take a single break on that entire trek up. And I don't know if you've done Rakaposhi Base Camp, but it's entirely uphill. There's no, like, oh, you'll walk upwards for 1 hour and then, like, it'll flatten out. No, it's just like climbing up, right? I was spent, like, when I got up there to the base camp.
You did make it.
I made it for the girl. I made it for the girl.
Love makes you do crazy things.
And I mean, coming down was even worse, like, because it's steep and your knees and ankles take a beating. So I went up. We didn't stop. There was no, like, oh, we're going to enjoy the view. No, because this was a timed thing. So we sped up there and we sped down. And then they invited me to join them for dinner. I'm like, you know, I'm scared. I don't know what else you guys have in store for me, but I'll do it for love. And we get there, and then she tells me that she's married and that, you know, she knew that I had a crush on her, and that is why she wanted me to do it, because it was funny. And that was my first trek in Pakistan. Before that, I had done a hike with a group of friends and my brother back, like, when I was still with the BBC, we had gone to Hunza. That's when I first developed a crush for Hunza. Before that, you know, I did a couple of short hikes in California, some in Italy. I did the Mount Etna hike. But yeah, I've always been a nature boy. I love the beach because I am from Karachi. You know, that's in my DNA. I love the ocean. But, you know, I do with whatever nature I can get. Right now we're sitting outside in your deck And I'm loving it.
Usually you get the Markley Hills, but currently you just get trees. Okay, so now I kind of want to go into what you're doing now. And I want to kind of get in your creative process. Like, I mean, when you think about creating tracks or creating new activities or the places that you're opening up, what's your creative process in thinking through what is it that you want people to experience? What is it that you want people to kind of go home with? Like, what's that, you know, that inner feeling that you're trying to create with everything that you do?
I've now kind of deviated from the original plan. There was no plan, really. Like, all of this just happened out of the blue, you know, starting a tour company, whatever. Like, that was not even a plan. Like, I had no plan. When I quit BBC, I had zero plan. And now I've sort of become a very spontaneous person where I'll go with the flow. I'll do what feels right. And while I was on that walk with Paul Selopek, and by the way, like, if anybody wants to follow that journey, that's Out of Eden Walk on National Geographic. And while I was on the Out of Eden Walk with Paul, one night we were sitting in Pasu in this like summer winter pasture called Khurramabad, and we were staying overnight in a shepherd hut.
Okay.
And we were just like getting ready for dinner. And it was a beautiful location, completely isolated, beautiful structure, but, you know, not maintained at all, falling apart. And, you know, just like small talk with Paul, I was like, you know, this would be such a cool place to stay if they would just, you know, fix it up, you know, maybe add some solar power here, comfortable bedding. I mean, this is a great shelter, and it's like made of all locally sourced material, mud and stone and wood. It has so much character, and the place is beautiful. There were apple trees outside. And so Paul and I just started talking about this, and then we started comparing places like this in other countries like Peru, where they use shepherd huts for bed and breakfasts.
No way.
Yeah. And, you know, Nepal has tea houses, Peru has shepherd huts. I was like, man, like, I can't even tell you how many shepherd huts I've seen in my time here, right? And so that planted the seed. And so Paul's like, you should do it. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do one. And so that's how this whole thing started, where I'm like, okay, I'm gonna start converting shepherd huts that I love, that I've stayed at, my clients have stayed at and loved, and try and just do one pilot and see if I can find funding for more. And so that's what I did. I used a friend's shepherd hut up in a place called Yashpurth, which is across the Batura Glacier.
Okay.
It's a two-day journey on foot to get there. There's no like road access. And that was the idea, to provide comfortable, safe housing for adventure travelers, not for vehicle travelers, you know, vehicle tourists, motorized tourists. Yeah. And so I did the first one. I put out a call on my Instagram for support, like volunteer support, not money support. And out of nowhere, I started getting messages on my Instagram, people from Dubai, people from Karachi, people that I didn't even know reached out and said, you know, I can help you with this and that. I can help you with this. I can help you get a sponsor for like paint and for solar.
Sick.
And then, you know, the most beautiful part about that one was that the entire community of Pasu helped. Like, they didn't charge any money to help, like, convert the place, right? And so, like, people came from everywhere. We hiked up to Yashpurth. Took us 2 days. And within 1 week, we had converted this, like, you know, it was already a beautiful shepherd hut, but, you know, it was being used to store shepherd, like, you know, equipment and gear and random stuff.
It had not been thought of
the as way a
you,
as
you
a,
need a different perspective, yeah. Right? Sometimes you just need a different perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, and then within 1 week we converted it. One of the guys that helped, he's a YouTuber, Muru. He came, did the whole thing on video. He turned it into a vlog, which helped me get support even more.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so most recently, again, like I took a 2-year break because of COVID. I didn't do another one till just now. And then I thought it was time to do another one. And then again, like I started fundraising, and this guy I had just met loved the idea, became an investor. He had just moved back from Vancouver. He was looking to invest in Pakistani businesses, or, you know, overseas Pakistanis wanting to come back and invest. He wanted to invest. He became an investor. Then the, the Canadian Heart Surgeons Association somehow found me.
What?
On like a YouTube video that this traveler YouTuber Drew Binsky did of me. And they found my video and they're like, hey, we want to do a talk with you. That's that talk I was telling you where I got really long-winded. Yeah. And then they started supporting me financially in other ways. And so, yeah, I was able to build one from scratch that we just launched in a little village called Hashupi in Shigar.
Okay.
About 45 minutes past the Shigar Fort. And we just launched it on the 3rd of September. And it's doing really well. I mean, we've already like hosted 3 groups.
Nice.
It's doing really well. And hopefully we'll do the next one next year in Chitral.
Brilliant. Okay. We're going a little bit long, but I have 2 more questions that I kind of want to ask you. One would be a little bit about, like, I mean, you mentioned the BBC Naveed, and then you mentioned the Now Naveed. Like, how do you unpack Pakistan for people when you bring people over here now, for instance?
Well, you know, you can't just abandon what you know and what you were. And so I find it as a good mix, a good blend of like the highly paranoid Naveed that looked at maps and saw red like regions, the no-go areas. But the Now Naveed sees them for what they truly are. I mean, these maps are marked red by people that have never been there most of the times. They go by, you know, situational reports by security companies or, you know, like monitoring companies that all they get paid to mark places red, right? The Now Naveed now knows better. And although I'm very careful with how I plan things, I do risk assessments because that's what I've been trained to do. I do risk assessments for all of my itineraries. And they're not all risk assessments of crime and terrorism and security lapses, but they're also risk assessments of trail safety and how to pack and what type of injuries and illnesses to watch out for. Altitude, sickness, or a fall on a bad trail, or how to pack, what medicine to bring. You know, so the Now Naveed, I feel, would not have been able to do this without the old BBC Naveed, which helped me prepare for, you know, assessing risk and doing research, which I feel more companies should do before.
100%. I think it's always good to have a fail-safe or have a plan.
Plan Bs are great. You know, Plan Cs are even better, you know, because when things go wrong, they go really wrong. And the mountains, you know, they make their own weather. You can never predict what's going to happen on a trip. There are so many, like, I took a group just recently to Mushroom Base Camp, and the mom, you know, this family has now become a regular, like, group with me. They've done 3 tours in less than a year. And she goes, Naveed, like, we don't even know what happens behind the scenes with you. We've seen you with us, but we've also seen you disappearing into a tent looking really stressed out, into the mess tent, and then coming out, looking at us like nothing ever happened. So we wonder what happens behind the scenes. And I told her, I was like, you know, there's so much that happens that could destroy your experiences. And it's all about just preparing for it beforehand and like making sure that if something does happen, you're prepared for it. And